Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
Same place. Why of all days? Why today? Why do you do me like that?
I have that all the time. All the time. And it's always when I'm exporting the episode to put it out. And it takes 46 hours to put it out.
You're like, that's unreasonable.
Yeah.
And then you just like try not to get wound up because you know that that's going to make it worse. You're like that. It's okay. But like your voice just gets higher and higher.
You can feel the bubbling sensation like coming up.
You're like choking on your own rage.
Yeah. I just came back from, me and Will walked down the street because this guy was having an estate sale, which you guys don't really have in England. You don't really have like garage sales or estate sales or yard sales. You have car boot sales.
No, I wish we did. They look well good. Yeah. I love a car boot sale.
Loved this, Talissa.
No! Why am I here? This fucking crummy country.
Me and Will were trying to figure out what this man did as his job because he was an old guy and it was like his retirement sale. He had posters and posters and posters of old dirty movies.
Oh my god!
They looked really cool and they were vintage and we were like, he must have worked at a movie theater or like a
in
dirty
LA
theater.
Like that is totally a possibility. Like maybe he's an old porn star and he was in all of them or something, or like directed them, or oh my god.
Yeah, that's what Will said. He was like, maybe he was a director of porn, but then he was talking to this guy about how he knew Quentin Tarantino and like gave him posters all the time.
Wow.
Just like name dropping.
Clang.
Yeah, we didn't end up buying anything, though, because we were like, where would we put this stuff? Unless we had, like, a cool bar in our home, we wouldn't. They were huge. They were, like, wall-sized.
Wow. What, just so tits big and stuff?
No, that's the thing. Like, old, dirty movies were kind of classy. They didn't have, like...
Soft porn.
You know, they didn't have, like, what we have now. But they had, like, funny phrases, like... She's a sex Olympian and she's going for gold.
Saving Ryan's privates.
Yeah. So it was really cool. We didn't
that
end
sounds
up getting
fun.
Anything, but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I'm really jealous that there is a yard sale with porn. That looks so fun.
Yeah. Why don't you explain what you guys have?
A car boot sale? You don't even know what a fucking car boot is. Like, you get all of your old shit and you put it in the trunk of your car, and then on a Sunday you'll drive to like a random farmer's field, and then all the cars park up in lines, and then they get wallpapering tables and like set them out. This is so specific that this is just how it works. You get like a wallpaper. Well, this is what we did. I'm not sure what other people do, but like this is how we did one. And like if someone goes, oh, I'm having a car boot sale, you're like, you need a wallpapering table. Like you're gonna lend it to them. So like, yeah, you just put all your old shit on it, like knickknacks from the house and clothes you don't wear anymore and toys.
Yeah, it's like the mini version of a yard sale. Whatever you can fit in your car and display somewhat nicely.
Yeah, it's like a yard sale, but it's everyone's car. And you have rows and rows and rows.
Right, and everyone like walks along the rows and checks out everyone else's knickknacks, and you bargain and like, oh, I'll give you a pound for that. Like, I've only been to one in my life.
I've been to more than I can count.
Yeah.
Selling and buying.
yeah, exactly. That's what I was doing. Me and my friend, when I was in uni in Wales, we went to one.
A Welsh car boot sale. The best of all the car boot sales, I'm sure, because it's got Welsh people haggling at it.
Yeah, nothing more than £5. £5 was the max that you would spend.
You're off your tits if you try and charge something. Like, what are you... It's bric-a-brac. It's just crap, essentially.
Yeah, like, we didn't even have a table. We put out a blanket.
Yeah, some people do that.
Stuff on the blanket.
Yep. Some the less experienced of the car booters will maybe have a blanket. Yeah. Just so as your stuff doesn't touch the floor, it's all good. Right. And you'll always have somebody come over and be like, pick something up and then look at it and put it down. And then they'll circle back again. And then they'll go, how much is this? And you'll go, £1.
Yeah.
And then they'll go, all right, and put it down. And then they'll come back again. Like, it's just like, because there's no, like, it's not urgent.
no they're going to be there for the rest of the day,
and they know that.
Can I get a pound for that? Sorry, I was trying to do a Welsh accent.
All right, my lovely, have you got a pound for that? Yeah, you just like give them change out of your little ice cream box or whatever. You just feel really like you feel like you're playing shops. It's quite fun.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I did have some order of business.
Yes.
So apparently last week when I was going da 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 da, yeah, apparently that's the French national anthem.
Yes, and I remember the American version, which goes da 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 da.
That's the graduation song, right?
Yes,
that's what I was trying to do.
That's what we were trying to.
In a way, my friend Emily was like, you just sang the French anthem and then you went straight into Milhouse chat. And I was like, I was singing the graduation song. She was like, no, you weren't. So, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for helping us out with that.
So, we don't really have much time to waste, do we?
No, let's get straight into it.
Yeah.
We're recording two today.
Yeah.
Because I'm going on vacation next week.
Yeah, Rachel's off. Bless her. You deserve it. You work hard.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So for marginalized people, which is our episode today, I go first.
Yeah, so we're doing it because it was the first one that we ever did, right? Mm-hmm. So we're doing like a take two kind of.
Yeah, we're going to start doing take twos of everything that we've done this past year.
Yeah, like our best or our favorites or easy ones or So yeah, I'm excited. And it's kind of like, it's really fun. I think it's fun that we've done a year and now we're doing like the theme again. It's almost like we've earned.
The greatest hits.
The greatest hits. The greatest hits. Like we've earned this. So we're like covering our own song.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead with yours, I think, mate.
All right. So my story is about Angie Zapata, who was trans.
Okay.
Which is definitely a marginalized group.
Yep.
In the US and I'm sure the UK as well.
Oh, hugely. Like, we just had a thing the other day. Could keep this all anonymous because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But like, my friend at her work, had an article in a magazine, and she was like, somebody's complained about this article, do you think it's transphobic? And I read it and I was like, it's fucking outrageous that somebody would publish that without thinking it was transphobic. And she was like, what's transphobic about it? And I was like, basically they said, you know, we have to look at both sides and we have to be fair to women's rights as well as trans rights. And I was like, they're not in opposition with each other.
No,
they are one. They're not one thing, but like they're two separate issues. Like, what, you're obviously a TERF.
Yeah, that's the problem with today. It's like everyone thinks that everyone has to be pitted against each other when it shouldn't be like that. Yes, there are women's rights. Yes, there are trans rights.
Let's remember who we're all fighting here. The white men.
Yes.
Let's all remember who we're supposed to be having a pop at.
The patriarchy.
Exactly. Like, you do not need to, like, this person, I don't know what the fuck, but like, they were obviously a bit older, like, and had an agenda in the way they were writing it. Like, you have to consider both sides of the argument. I was like, what argument? There is no argument. The argument you speak of is one you made up.
Yeah. What was that for? What was the article published in?
Oh, it's like the company magazine. So it was basically like talking about trans rights, but it just for no reason whatsoever brought in issues about women's rights. And I was like, why are you're already mentioning that because you're a TERF, which is a trans exclusionary revolutionary feminist, which basically means you think that trans women are a threat to women because
I haven't heard of that.
Haven't you? So you know J.K. Rowling, you know everyone's like J.K. Rowling's a dick. Yeah. That's because she is a TERF. She published a thing on Twitter being like, oh, loads of trans people have surgery and they regret it. And we're like, where are you getting your, where is this research coming from? Right. Also, what business is it? And is why? It of yours?
Yeah.
It's literally none of your fucking business. I don't know why you're piping up about this. Keep writing about wizards and stop getting in trouble on Twitter. Yeah.
Which sucks because it's like, she wrote about people who are different and who were all accepted into like a school and
and there was that
people who felt different, which is how some people can feel when they're trans or
of course
LGBTQ.
I really didn't see that coming from her.
Never in a million, when you were 10 years old and reading Harry Potter, would you really think that she'd be in the news for being a dick? No, you wouldn't.
Hate speech basically. No. It really didn't.
Exactly.
I don't know what's happened, but I think she got a bit loopy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll get into my story. I did want to say that it is an issue that has come up in the news in the past, since 2021 started, because I think about at least 10 trans people have been murdered in 2021.
God.
Because they were trans.
And there's so much in the news at the moment that... What chance do you have of that being covered?
Right. That often gets pushed aside.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to talk about Angie Zapata. I hope I'm saying her name right.
Yeah.
Angie Zapata was born August 5th, 1989 in Brighton, Colorado. She was assigned male at birth, and her single mother, Maria Zapata, named her Justin. From a young age, she was feminine, watching her sisters put on makeup and pretending she had long hair. By the time Angie reached middle school, she came out to her family. She had 4 sisters and a brother, and they were all supportive of her.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but her mother worried about her safety.
Mm.
By 16 years old, she was known as Angie to her family and close friends, while she still presented as male in public. According to her siblings, that was really hard for her. She wanted to be more feminine, but she was bullied a lot.
Plus, if you're still living in the town you grew up in, it's not like you can be like, fresh start, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Everyone is still going to, everyone's going to know that you've transitioned because they're going to know you before.
Exactly. And they said, her mom said specifically that she had a really rough time in grade school where she got picked on by kids because they were like, oh, you like boys and you like wearing makeup. But the teachers also gave her problems.
Oh, jeez.
So it just wasn't easy for her, which I'm sure is the case for a lot of trans kids and even gay kids sometimes.
Yeah.
In high school, she began to be more comfortable in wearing makeup and more feminine clothes. So she was just becoming herself. To her loved ones, she was funny, loving, and had a toughness that grew from years of bullying. Her siblings told her that when people picked on her that she should fight back, and so she started to.
That's amazing.
They said how she was at a gas station once, and 2 guys came up to her and just started harassing her. And she was, I think they said she was 5'7", but she wore heels all the time.
Yeah.
And so she was taller than both of them, and she just beat them up.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And she told them, like, when you tell people, you can tell them that you got beat up by a gay kid. Which I thought was awesome. So in 2008, at 18 years old, this is a short story, by the way.
Yeah, mine's pretty short.
In 2008, at 18 years old, she moved into her own place in Greeley, Colorado. A small 1-bedroom apartment 2.5 blocks away from her mom's house. She worked at Good Times Restaurant and as a babysitter for her sister, and would be seen weekly at Trax, the gay nightclub not too far from where she lived. Angie's sister, Monica, said that Angie had dreams of moving to Denver to work as a cosmetologist and becoming a professional drag queen. I love that.
Well, that is just goes hand in hand, right? Like, you need to be fucking good at makeup.
Yeah.
No, but what I'm saying is like you're learning a skill that will help you get to the next part of your dream. Or even if the next part of your dream doesn't happen, you've still got like a really good skill that you can do for other drag queens or other people.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a win-win.
Or anybody.
Yeah.
Angie also had a mentor in their small town, Kitty DeLeon, who was also a transgender woman. And she gave Angie advice, especially to always be honest about who she was.
Yeah.
And to be careful around men as she began dating. So she basically said, like, don't ever lie because that can take people off guard. And
also there's the whole like gay panic defense.
Well, we'll get into that.
Oh, will we?
Yes. That's one of the reasons why I brought that up, because this whole story is based on that.
As in maybe saying that she was lying when she'd been specifically told not to lie and didn't.
Well, yeah. And everyone in her life was like, she was an honest,
open,
just open person. And to say that she wasn't was a complete lie.
Yeah.
So Angie joined the website Moco Space, a social media website. Have you heard of Moco Space?
No.
Moco Space.
Have you?
So this is like 2008. I feel like I kind of remember it.
Is it a gay thing? Is that why we didn't know about it?
No, it's not. It was another social media website that came out around the same time that MySpace and Facebook.
maybe it's a Colorado thing.
Well, it still exists.
What? I'm looking this up.
Yeah. It just looks really dated, but you could tell that it just got overshadowed by all the other big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main things about it was that you would use it on your cell phone, and that wasn't really a thing yet.
Yeah.
It was a little bit before its time.
Well, that is cool. I feel like I was left in the dark.
I didn't know.
How is this story about the 90s making me feel not cool?
This is 2008.
What?
It's okay. We were, 20? We didn't care about that stuff yet.
I've totally lost track of my life. You know when you go, oh yeah, the year 2000, that was like, you know, a couple of years ago. It's like, no, that was like 20 one years ago. Yeah.
Don't even remind me.
Ugh. So like someone, there was like a meme that was like a puzzle. Like, you know, the woman with a puzzle in front of her face. And it was like.
Yes.
And it was like, because you sometimes.
Math equation.
Yeah, because you sometimes put that math equation over Tito's face for like when he looks. To your dog.
Right.
Yeah, like it's that. And it was like 35 year olds trying to work out how they've already lived through four decades.
No.
I don't like this.
We're talking about Moco Space. Like, I remember how into doing my MySpace I was.
That taught me HTML.
Yes.
I use it in my job now. Like, if it wasn't for that, I would not know HTML now.
Oh my gosh. Same.
Only reason. Yeah. It's crazy. Truly,
it was like opening a treasure box, like, oh, I don't have to go by what's in front of me. I can like change it around on MySpace and imagine, be different than everyone else.
Imagine if you could do that on like Facebook or Twitter. Like, but it just makes me laugh because like that's why MySpace looks so dated, because someone who isn't a designer is designing their own page. So it's just like a missing poster for a cat that's got like Comic Sans on it. And like, it's just fucking mental, like glitter glue. And like, it's just like that on the internet.
Glittery memes.
Yeah. How to make Google, how to make stars fall down your MySpace page when people open it. And your like song, you get a song that played like immediately when you went.
That was my favorite part.
Right. Like kids that don't know what it was.
No. And that's what sucked about Facebook. I remember when the two were competing.
And it is still shit and plain.
Yeah. When Facebook was competing with MySpace, it was like, oh, I hate Facebook because you can't put a song on it.
You used to have a top 5 friends on Facebook, didn't you?
I think it was top 8.
Oh, top 8. And that was all, you knew when people had fell out of school because they slipped that person out of their top 8. Oh, if someone was going out with someone because then that person became number 1.
Yes. Yes.
So good.
Yeah.
Mate. Politics, Hashtag politics. I remember trawling through an ex-boyfriend's like MySpace comments, like, because I thought that this girl liked him, and I was like, I'm gonna find that fucking comment that she left on it like 2 years ago. I was like, what is wrong with me? Get a life.
When you could like easily do that now too with Instagram, that's like a normal thing to just like troll through their old photos and, and see what were they like before me.
Or who liked their photos. Like, oh, why is this like Beth girl like liking all of your photos? Like, what is happening there? And then it just suddenly drops off in 2008.
What happened?
Fell out, did we?
Yeah.
Digital footprint. Anyways.
Okay. Back to Moco Space.
Yeah.
So Angie, she joined Moco Space, and she also called the singles chat line LiveLinks in order to meet new people. And LiveLinks was like, you would call up and leave a voicemail and say, hey, my name is Rachel. I'm 30 years old and I love movies and da 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 da. And
they
would leave a number and they would call that if they're interested in meeting you.
Oh my God, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, I don't know if it still exists, but so for this LiveLinks, Angie was also open about being trans as well. So there she was as well. While on Moco Space, Angie met Alan Andrade, an unemployed 31-year-old man from Thornton, Colorado. After exchanging emails and hundreds of text messages, they decided to meet up. But Andrade was unable to make it up to Greeley as he didn't have a car.
Oh my God, have I been out with this guy?
You've been there. So he convinced Angie to come pick him up, which was a 2-hour round trip for her because Thornton was an hour away from Greeley. So she had to drive, pick
him
up.
How old was she?
And then drive back. 18.
Yeah, well, you do that when you're 18. You're like, oh, I like this boy. I'm gonna just fuck up my day completely to just do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Right. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Also, he was 31. And it's like,
That's
what kind of 31-year-old
bit of a
is
flag.
Convincing an 18-year-old?
You fucking loser. Oh.
Right.
It's so hard to spot losers when you're 18, though. It's so hard.
It really is.
It's really difficult.
I agree. I'm thinking of myself at 18 where I just had no self-esteem. And if anyone gave me any attention, I would just throw it at them.
Throw what?
Throw attention and like anything at them. Like, you like me? Oh my gosh, we're going to be best friends, or you're going to be my boyfriend.
Oh, we're going to get married.
Yep. I've already planned our life.
Yeah. The wedding dress is in my head.
Yep.
By the way, what's your second name?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I'm just remembering me at 18.
Like, it's horrible, isn't it? Don't do that. It'll haunt you before you go to sleep. Before you go to sleep, you'll go, oh, why did I do that?
I think I was doing that last night. Like, I was like, why did I do that at 18? Why did I give attention to this person when I barely knew anything about them or if they even liked me?
You
truly
have to forgive your inner child and your real life 18-year-old you because they didn't know what they were doing.
Oh, man. I've started doing this thing where this is going to sound really cheesy, but when I start to feel that like shame and guilt
Like,
how I was, then I give my younger self a hug.
Oh, Rachel, that's so nice. Yeah, so. No, but that is a proven like counseling method. When you remember, you have to like remind yourself that back then you were just a child and you're not who you are now. And you're looking at it through your adult eyes and going, why did I do that? And it's like, because you were a kid. Like, if a kid did that now, would you go to them, God, you fucking idiot? Or would you go, oh, they're just a kid? Like,
right, exactly. And you don't know all the things you know now. So,
no.
Yeah, I would recommend anyone do that when you feel that way. Just give your younger self a hug.
Yeah, it really helped me actually to hear that. It's like to forgive yourself.
Right, yeah. And just give yourself love.
Give yourself a break.
and we're going to change this podcast into a self-help podcast. Give yourself a break.
With Talissa and Rachel. No, it basically is, in a way. But I think it's because, like, we're so willing to admit that we did stupid stuff.
Right.
Not everyone can do that.
Which is part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of growing and moving on. You have to accept that you did stuff.
You just have to drop.
Everyone did shit.
You have to drop the ego and just be like, yes, I'm an idiot. We're all idiots. We've all done stupid shit. Like, let's just come on. Let's just carry on now with this plot along with life.
Yes. Move on.
It's hard enough. We don't
give
need to.
A hug.
Yeah. It's hard enough. We don't need to make it harder by harking back on that fucking guy. Like, right. Yeah.
Okay. So she. Okay. So on July 15th, 2008, Angie convinced her mom to let her borrow her car so that she could go and pick up Andrade. So she even told her mom, like, please, can I use your car?
Yeah.
So she picked him up. The two went on a date and Andrade spent the night at Angie's apartment. They spent the next day hanging out with each other, with Andrade joining Angie on several errands, including going to court so that Angie could pay for a traffic violation. Andrade, that's something to note for later.
Okay.
Andrade spent another night at Angie's, and the next day, Angie went out to babysit her nieces and nephews and left Andrade at the apartment. According to Andrade, which this could be complete bullshit, while Angie was gone, Andrade noticed pictures around the apartment that led him to believe that Angie was transgender. When she returned later that day, he confronted her about whether or not she was transgender. Angie said that she was all woman, to which Andrade grabbed Angie's crotch and he reacted angrily because she hadn't had surgery.
Yeah.
He began beating Angie with fists, and then he grabbed a fire extinguisher and hit her over the head with it several times.
No.
Andrade covered Angie's body with a blanket, grabbed the fire extinguisher, Angie's purse, and several other items around the apartment and fled, driving away in Angie's mom's car.
Okay, so that's murder and theft and robbery. So, like, you're a fucking Grand Theft Auto. So you're basically, that's death penalty territory, surely. In Colorado.
It wasn't mentioned in this case.
Well, I'm not surprised because it included a trans person.
Well, no, actually, well, we'll talk about that because Colorado is actually one of the few states that deals with that in a good way.
Wow.
So 2 days later, Angie's body was discovered by her two sisters who called the police. Yeah, really sad.
And not a nice scene.
No. They actually called the ambulance because they thought maybe she was still alive.
Well, that makes me think that I don't know if they pulled the sheet off or anything. Maybe they just saw.
Yeah, they did. There was blood everywhere. The ambulance said that there was so much blood that they didn't know whether she was stabbed or what had happened to her.
Fuck.
So no one knew who Angie had been hanging out with over the past few days, only that he was an older man. Her cell phone, among other items, had mysteriously disappeared. But with a stolen car and using Angie's credit cards, that's crime 101. Andrade was found in less than 2 weeks, driving the stolen car near his home in Thornton.
What? He didn't even...
He's not a smart guy.
What a dick, to say the least. Like, bit of an understatement, but still.
He was arrested and charged with premeditated murder, felony motor vehicle theft, and felony identity theft. He is also charged with a felony hate crime. While in custody, Andrade admitted to beating Angie with the fire extinguisher, saying, "I killed it."
Oh, so you
called her an it.
Fucking awful man.
Yes. He's just a gross human being, with which we will find in the next paragraph.
Yeah.
And this is also, I think, why he didn't get the death penalty, because he admitted to it pretty much straight away.
Well, they had him fucking back to rights. It'd have been stupid. So, I should, like, not admit to it. Anyway.
I know. You've got the car. You've got her credit cards.
We caught you with her credit cards, and you were the last person to see with her, and you're driving her mum's stolen car.
Yes.
And sure, I wonder if there's any kind of evidence from the phone situation. They'll have them texting each other.
We'll talk about that.
Oh, I'm so keen. Yeah. I'm so keen. I keep almost ruining it. I'm just like, let's nail this mother.
Yeah. So they arrested him. He remained in jail while awaiting trial. And during his time in prison, prosecution were able to gather several phone calls that Andrade made to his ex-girlfriend, in which he claimed several things. And this is where he's even more of a trash human being.
Mm.
He said, "It's not like I just went up to a school teacher and shot her in the head. You know what I mean? Not like I killed a law-abiding straight citizen."
You're not even a law-abiding straight citizen.
Yeah. Like, he's trying to justify it. Like, just gross.
Yeah.
And then he also said that all gay things need to die.
Is that really your beef? Or should you concentrate on getting a job?
Yeah, there's a lot of other things to
load of stuff
in life.
Getting a car, getting a job.
Therapy.
What are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, and what was I going to say? There's an LGBTQ blog writer around the time of this happening, and I can't remember their name, but they concluded that they thought that Andrade was possibly gay himself, and it was very repressed.
Yeah.
And he was just super homophobic and didn't want it to come out.
Like, that happens a lot, I think.
Yes. Just repressed.
Projection.
Just don't push it down, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're just projecting your self-hatred onto someone who is comfortable enough with themselves to be who they want to be when you're not. Like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So Andrade's trial began on April 16th, 2009, and lasted 1 week. Angie's family pressed for him to be prosecuted under a hate crime. National attention was drawn to the case because of the grisly nature of the crime, as well as being the first to have a hate crime law applied at trial, with the victim being transgender.
Mm.
Andrade's defense used what's known as the gay panic defense.
Yeah.
Which you got. A strategy that claims that the defendant acted in a state of violent temporary insanity, committing assault or murder because of unwanted same-sex sexual advances.
It's even, like, hearing it out loud is outrageous.
It's ridiculous.
We've spoken about this before as well. We're like, what if every woman that didn't want to be come on to fucking beat the shit out of guys and then went, well, I just didn't want them to come on to me, so I killed them. Is that okay?
Oh.
Absolutely not.
It was temporary insanity.
They pushed me so far. Like, mate, I could have murdered about 25 people. Like, if that defense was viable.
Yeah.
I'm sure loads of people could have.
I should have looked at, like, how often that defense strategy has worked for people.
A couple of times. It genuinely has. Like, but I think it's in the more... like in the less progressive states or the more religious states that it goes better.
Right.
Like, for example, in New York, I don't think it would work. Any of the coastal elite kind of vibe, I don't think it would work. But yeah, in the Deep South or Bible Belt.
Yeah, so Colorado, I feel, is kind of on the cusp. It's close to California, but it's also kind of close to the Midwest. There's a lot of, like, Midwest-type towns.
Seems like they did a good job of this, though. Like...
So more about the gay panic defense. A defendant may allege to have found the same-sex sexual advances so offensive or frightening that they were provoked into reacting, were acting in self-defense, were of diminished capacity, or were temporarily insane, and that this circumstance is exculpatory or mitigating. It is typically used by men to justify their assault or murder of gay men or trans women.
Mm-hmm.
Andrade claimed that he did not know that Angie was transgender and that nothing was premeditated. They said that Angie had led Andrade on, and when he confronted Angie, she had smiled and he snapped.
Led him on like he asked her to go and get him and she did. What?
Yeah.
Did she have a gun to your head? Did she force you in the car? Right. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So... defense also tried to claim that Angie was a sex worker, and I really like the judge in this case because every time defense came up with, like, stupid things like this, Judge Marcelo Kopkow ruled to throw that out as irrelevant to the case. Like,
yeah,
whether she was a sex worker or not, it doesn't matter.
Also, if she was a sex worker, I doubt she'd be driving an hour to get you, the unemployed man. Right. I'm sure there's lots of sex work in Colorado she could have been doing. Like,
yeah, right.
Don't be ridiculous.
But she wasn't. Her friends and family were adamant that she was not.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, it just doesn't make sense, that story. Yeah.
Yeah. But also using that as like, she's a sex worker.
I'm allowed to be a head in with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah. I know we're on the same page about that.
Yeah. Super angry.
Prosecution sought to show that Andrade did know that Angie was transgender, saying that he had spent two nights with her and the errand he ran with her when they went to court for her to pay her traffic violation. She was called to the stand in court as Justin Zapata.
Mm-hmm.
So if she was called to the stand in her birth name, which was male, and Andrade was with her at court.
Isn't that the time to bring it up?
How could he not have noticed that? Yeah. So while they never found the cell phone that would have shown further proof of their hundreds of text messages, they never found it.
I think he probably destroyed that because it probably proved like he knew exactly who she was.
Yeah. Right. And so yeah, that completely disappeared. Sorry, Tito's throwing me off.
Thing is though, if I was just while you were telling your story, I was going you'd be like, what are you doing? Stop it.
Is everything okay, Tulsa? I found out the other day that there's coyotes in this area.
Oh, dear. Get him a spiky coat.
I know.
Spiky coat time.
Normally, like, I'll let him out at night. Rather than walking him at night, I'll just let him out into the yard and let him go to the bathroom. But now I'm, like, terrified that I'm going to open the door one day and there's going to be coyotes in our yard.
Yeah, that's petrifying. How big are they? Are they like a big dog? Or are they like a fox?
It depends, like, how hungry they are. How starving they are.
Fucking hell.
But they can be between, like, a fox and a mid-sized dog. So, text messages, couldn't find the cell phone. Friends and family gave evidence that Angie was always honest about being transgender. I don't know why I didn't keep this part in, but they also found sex toys. They found a vibrator with only Andrade's DNA on it. And they found another sex toy with only Angie's DNA on it.
I see what you've been doing there.
Yeah. They didn't have sex with each other, but...
They were obviously doing stuff.
Yeah, they were doing stuff. And, like, how could you not know if you guys were doing stuff
like
that?
Also, you were together for two... You stayed, like, around her house for two nights. If you're like any guy that I know, you'll be like in their bed being like, look, are we going to do it or not? Because if not, I'll just go home.
Yeah. And the mentor, Kitty DeLeon, she said later on, she was like, Angie was 18 years old. Hormones racing. If Andrade didn't like see anything in that sense, like there would have been... signs that Angie was aroused or whatever, and very, very much proof that Angie was transgender.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So the jury deliberated for 2 hours.
Wow.
Not very long. I feel like this would have been easy. On April 22nd, 2009, Andrade was found guilty of first-degree murder, hate crimes, aggravated motor vehicle theft, and identity theft. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yes, you, sir, may fuck off. Because Andrade had 6 prior felony convictions, so he was a unemployed 31-year-old.
With 6 felonies.
Yeah.
Do you know what they were, or were they just...
They were not violent, I believe.
So probably stealing and stuff.
Except for while he was waiting in jail for this trial, he had gotten into a fight in prison. So that was one of them as well.
Yeah, a bit of a temper, this guy.
Yeah. It's all that repression, I think.
Yeah.
Because Andrade had 6 prior felony convictions, the judge dubbed him a habitual criminal. This added an additional 60 years to his sentence. As of October 2015, Andrade is serving his time at Limon Correctional Facility. This was the first time that a defendant accused of murdering a transgender person was tried under Colorado's hate crime law, which was amended to include sexual orientation, including transgender status, in July 2005, which was 3 years before this trial had happened. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty progressive. Yeah. Like, how many states were doing that at the time? Not a lot. After the trial, Angie's family released a statement saying, "We are grateful that Colorado has tough laws that make it clear that attacking someone because of anti-gender bias will be taken seriously. Targeting someone because she is transgender will be prosecuted aggressively in Weld County. This means a lot to our family. We are grateful that the laws are in place that hate crimes are wrong. In memory of Angie, we call on Colorado's leaders to pass a federal hate crime law to protect everyone."
Yeah.
Despite this, federal hate crime laws did not include sexual orientation and gender identity.
How?
So that's at the federal
Jeez.
Level. The Human Rights Campaign, an LGBTQ advocacy group, has called violence against transgender people a national epidemic.
Yeah.
And requested in a list of policy recommendations released in November 2020 that the Biden administration form an interagency working group to address anti-transgender violence. And that is the story and subsequent laws and
trial
world yes of Angie Zapata.
That was so good. I've never heard of it, and makes me think a lot more of Colorado. I thought they were like in the group.
Yeah,
I thought they were in the group of states that wouldn't care.
No, they're pretty progressive. Yeah. I think they are, along with California, they're one of the first, or one of the states that legalized marijuana.
Oh, yeah. I remember that now.
What else do they do? So, yeah, there's that, and there's the hate crime laws. So,
and they have the super prison.
Yes, you're right.
Colorado, yeah. Tough on crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Good for you, Colorado.
Right.
Yeah, I could learn a thing or two from Colorado, I'm sure. Okay, so I'm going to do a quite famous story in the UK, but like, I don't think people in the US would have heard of it. And also, I didn't really know what happened. Okay. I only heard it in the news when I was growing up, like in bits. So I was like, I'm going to look into that. So this is a story of Damilola Taylor.
I don't know if I know that.
Okay, so Damilola Taylor is basically, his family and him are immigrants to the UK. From Nigeria. So that's like the marginalized people part. And they also lived in Peckham in London, where there was a problem for a long time with like poverty and gangs. And I think there still is, but so that's the marginalized people part of my story, basically. So Damilola Olufemi Taylor was born in Lagos, Nigeria in 1990. His parents, Richard and Gloria Taylor, moved to England in 2000 when he was 10 because his sister had epilepsy and they were unable to treat it in Nigeria. It apparently was like a really aggressive form of epilepsy.
Aww.
Yeah, so they needed some like experts. And we've got a hospital here in London called the Great Ormond Street Hospital, which is like just for children. And it's really famous. Yeah, so according to his friends, Damilola was a really bubbly and outgoing kid. They also said that he dreamed of being a doctor so that he could help to cure his sister's epilepsy, which is really cute.
What a great kid.
I know, like when you're 10 and say that. Yeah. So he's 10 in this story. On the 27th of November 2000, Damilola, so he's known to his family as Dammy, so I'm just going to call him Dammy from now on. He was caught on CCTV leaving Peckham Library at 4:50 p.m. to walk home. So he'd clearly gone to the library after school, which is really sweet. So he's obviously like quite studious.
Oh, that's precious.
I know. When he was on his way home to North Peckham Estate, he was accosted by two boys who stabbed him with a broken bottle in the left thigh, severing his femoral artery. He tried to get home, but he collapsed in a stairwell of the high-rise flats that he lived in. He led there for approximately 30 minutes before he was found and an ambulance was called. He was still alive in the ambulance on his way to hospital, but was pronounced dead when he got there. This was just 10 days before his 11th birthday. Horrible.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Dami's dad recalls the moment he received the call telling him the news. He said, the day I got the call was a Tuesday, and from the other end, it was my son's voice, his son Tunde, saying, Dami went to school yesterday and he hasn't come back. So the dad said, he didn't come back home. What happened? And he said that he died, and at that point, I collapsed. It was a real shock because I didn't expect death.
Oh my gosh. Growing up, I never knew anyone who was that violent as a child, like thinking it was okay to stab someone with glass.
Yeah, fucking hell. Like, you get into a little scrap, but that's about it. Hair pulling at best. Like,
sure.
Hit with a stick, maybe. Or... yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. That's Peckham. So the attack was witnessed by a 14-year-old girl who couldn't be named. And once the police talked to her, she named some suspects that she thought it was. They were four youths, two of which were 16-year-old brothers. In 2002, their trial started, and she was the prosecution's main witness. Because there was no CCTV. It was just her word for it, basically. The trial was held at the Old Bailey, and the defense found an expert witness called Alistair Wilson, who was the associate clinical director at the Royal London Hospital. He testified that Dami's wounds were consistent with falling on a broken bottle as a result of the attack, not being stabbed by one. Yeah. The prosecution said,
sure.
Also, how do you live with yourself defending a 10-year-old's murderer, even if they are like 12 and 13? Like,
yeah.
They were 12 and 13, by the way.
I thought you said they were 16.
Sorry, I've given away a bit of the story. Maybe you want to cut that out. Oh. I don't know. No. Okay. Actually, no. Because there were four youths, two of which were 16-year-old brothers. So it's just like loads of kids hanging out together.
Oh, okay.
I maybe didn't give it away. I don't know. So the prosecution said this was ridiculous. And for this theory to be correct, Dami would have to fly through the air like Peter Pan. So, they're like, that's just absolute horseshit. Their witness, a pathologist, argued that his injuries were consistent with him being stabbed in the thigh with a broken bottle whilst he was on the ground. So, they like obviously got him down and then did that, which is fucking nuts.
Yeah, there's something wrong with those
kids. That's vicious, like.
Yeah, yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, really, really like spiteful behavior. So two of the youths were found not guilty, and two were acquitted. So the two that were found not guilty was because there wasn't enough evidence, and the two that were acquitted was because the judge said that the 14-year-old girl's testimony was unreliable, which, if that's all you've got, is one 14-year-old girl's witness testimony, I do not think that is enough, really.
It's not, but...
Because, prosecution is... defense would rip her apart.
Right.
How is a 14-year-old girl supposed to stand up to a lawyer? Like,
and four kids that she's saying did all this.
It's pretty fucking brave to even be the main witness.
Yeah.
Especially kids that stab people with bottles.
Right.
So anyway, that case fell apart. So the police were frustrated, but they kept the investigation open. After new tips came in, the trainers of another boy, Daniel Preddy, were tested, as well as his brother Richard Preddy's sweatshirt cuff. New DNA techniques identified that there were blood on those items and that the blood belonged to Dami. Wow. So neither of these boys were the same four boys that they had tried earlier. This completely different people.
Wow.
So
how did they find them, though?
It was just tips, like anonymous tips.
Oh.
So in 2005, the police made new arrests. So there's a boy called Hassan Jihad, 19, and the two brothers who were aged 16 and 17 at the time. So they couldn't be named in the press due to their age. So they were just listed as two brothers or two children. This time they were all charged with manslaughter and assault. The trial started on the 24th of January, 2006. Alistair Wilson, that fucking pipe, testified again. He testified the same.
No.
I know. That Dami had died after falling on a broken bottle. After 6 days of deliberation, the jury cleared Hassan of all the charges. they were unable to reach a verdict with the charges of manslaughter against the Preddy brothers. So it was deemed a mistrial and they were let go. But that still left the door open for a retrial. So the police didn't fuck about. They got right back on it. So they were retried on the 23rd of June, 2006. So 6 months later. And since they were now both 18, they were allowed to be named in the press. So the trial lasted 33 days and they were both found guilty of manslaughter.
Wow.
On the 9th of October 2006, they were sentenced to 8 years in youth custody. The judge, Mr. Justice Golding, explained that the sentence was so low because of the boys' ages at the time, which were 12 and 13. He also argued there was no evidence that they planned to kill Dammy, and the bottle that killed him hadn't been taken to the scene with them. It later turned out that the boys were well known to the police and had been committing several robberies. They'd been caught committing robberies before their trial.
Where are their parents? what were they doing? Like 12 and 13 for the next 5 years, what were they doing? And they were known to the police. Also, what were the police doing? Like just letting them run around?
There's not much you can do. Like, it's not like the good old days where a policeman can give you a clip round the ear, take you home to your parents. Like, what can you do? I guess just a bad seed.
Man, that's rough.
Also, like, I would argue that they stabbed him in the leg, right, with this glass bottle. And I only know about a femoral artery from watching Red Dragon. So he goes, the guy's like, oh my God, he stabbed me in the dick or something. Like he thinks he's like tried to, and it's like, no, he stabbed you in the femoral artery, which is the artery that runs down your leg and you'll die in like, I don't know, like pretty fucking soon.
If you do it right. Goes straight to your heart, doesn't it?
So you can kill someone by stabbing them in the leg. But at 12 and 13, I don't think they would have known that at all. But you still shouldn't go around stabbing people with bottles.
Just don't stab anyone and you don't have to worry about
anyone bleeding to death.
Getting your artery or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it was, I don't think they meant to kill him. And I think they thought they were just stabbing him in the leg and he was going to have a stabbed up leg. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's all they thought.
Yeah.
But obviously that doesn't like excuse it, but it's really hard to argue intent.
Right.
I would say. So the brothers were meant to be paroled in 2010 after serving half of their sentence. Brilliant. Ricky was released on the 8th of...
That's not even enough time for rehabilitation. They've probably spent their whole childhood fucking up and bullying and stealing. And you give them, what, four years and they're released? Like, that's no time to help them.
I'm kind of shocked they didn't do the old, like, you need a new identity and stuff, because it was pretty high-profile case. And people were pretty outraged.
I'm sure in Peckham, everyone knows who you are and what you're doing and your name.
Yeah, so just for people that don't know, Peckham is in South London. And if you know, what's it called? Only Fools and Horses, that's based in Peckham. Like an English sitcom. It's a pretty rough bit of London. I wouldn't want to live there.
And it's not really like, it is London, but it's not like...
It's fucking far south.
You know, central London.
No, it's just, I feel like it's a suburb, to be honest.
Definitely.
I went to a gig, you know the band Jungle? They did a gig on a roof in a car park in Peckham, which was turned into a bar. And the toilets were just a bin bag wrapped around a toilet seat. So like you just literally shitting and pissing in a bin bag filled with sawdust.
That's
disgusting. I was like, this is not a solution to the toilet problem. But because I was like drunk and it was free gig, like I was just like, I'm not gonna complain about this, but thinking back on it, I was like, I just pissed into a sawdust shit filled bag. Like, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
Any age, I couldn't do that. Like, I have a hard time in like porta potties. I would not have been able to.
Oh, I was in London, mate.
Trash.
My standards were so low at that point. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Ricky was released on the 8th of September 2010, and Danny was released in 2011. Ricky was taken back to custody after 7 months because he was associating with gang members in Peckham, both of which were against his parole.
Duh.
Yeah.
What else does he know in
life? He hasn't got like mates on the other side of the river.
Didn't even give him a chance. Right. Yeah.
So he was released again on the 25th of January 2012. And then just 16 days later after that, he was seen again in Peckham with gang members. So he went back to prison.
Dude, just chill out.
And he was released in July of that year. So he went for another 6 months.
Okay.
In February 2020, Ricky was in trouble with the police again after he drove his car at a police officer, leaving her with serious injuries. He pled guilty. Whoa. Yeah, he pled guilty to causing serious injury by dangerous driving and driving whilst being disqualified. Oh, sorry, I started that like it wasn't a whole list of shit that he did wrong. So it starts with, he was charged with causing serious injury by dangerous driving, driving while disqualified, failing to stop, and driving without insurance. So that is the royal flush of driving offences.
Yes.
And he went back to prison for another 4 years.
Okay, I feel like give them longer than 4 years and maybe that'll give them a chance to change and not know the people that they know anymore.
Yeah.
And grow up a little
Well, obviously, bit. Ricky seems like a huge fuck up. I don't know what Danny's up to, but he seems to have pulled his socks up a little bit. He doesn't get mentioned again.
Okay.
Demi's parents were very disappointed with the length of the sentences, as were the public. Demi's mum, Gloria Taylor, died on the 8th of April 2008, but his dad, Richard, decided to carry on fighting for changes in the law in his son's memory. He called for a public inquiry into the handling of the case, and the tower block where Demi was killed was torn down and new homes were built on the site. Southwark Council, which is the council that obviously looks after Peckham, they had some youth offending services introduced, and they were one of the UK's first early intervention teams that was put in place. There was also an investment of £290 million in Peckham to help rebuild the area. The Damilola Taylor Trust was set up on the first anniversary of his death to give life, opportunity and hope to Britain's downtrodden and underprivileged youth. Despite this, youth unemployment and take-up of education and training opportunities in Peckham in the London Borough of Southwark is still the worst in London.
I was going to ask, like, that. So that was about 10 years ago. I wonder if things have improved in 10 years with all those supposed changes and money and...
No, I think they've probably got worse.
Shit like that.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is the story of Damilola Taylor.
Wow, I haven't heard of that, and it's so sad.
It's huge over here. Like, if you say Damilola Taylor, people know who that is, but I'm not sure they know, like, the story. Well, that's just me anyway. Like,
yeah,
maybe somebody who was a bit more aware of, like, gang issues, because it seems to be a gang issue.
Right, and that was when we were around 18-ish. So it's not like we were probably... paying attention.
I was busy using a flip phone and going out with losers, like, mostly. So I'm really sorry that,
good job. Yeah,
thank you. I'm really sorry that it's a short one, but I think we should probably hop to it.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Yeah,
bye.
Love you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at TransatCrimePod, Instagram at Transatlantic Crime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.